Hello, everyone. Wanted to pop in at the beginning of the episode real quick to let you know that starting in the new year, this show will have ads. We have moved to a new hosting site, and the ads will finally allow me to start paying Ron and Chuck for all that they do for the shows. So, like, $1 an episode. Also would like to let you know that if you are listening to the shows through the Comic Book Rundown feed, then starting in the new year, you may have to resubscribe to the show on a new feed, depending on the podcast app you are listening to it on. I have been trying to get the podcast apps to work with me, but they have me jumping through a bunch of different hoops. Spotify is the only one that was of any real help. So if the new year starts and the feed hasn't updated for you, go give us another search in your app and subscribe to the feed that is still putting out episodes. Thanks for listening. Now on with the show. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Kamen Rider Chronicles. For today's episode, we're going to talk about Kamen Rider Ichigo, the next two episodes, episodes 25 and 26. It's a part two and a single part, but also the beginning of a new character that's going to be here for a bit, which is kind of fun. So, yeah. Going from here, don't have anything to really say. Oh, actually, I did see something kind of cool the other day that the actor who played Takeshi Hongo, the original Takeshi, the original Kamen Rider, he, and I can't remember his name, his son and daughter from his second marriage, I think it was, apparently they at some point in time became, you know, followed his footsteps. I think his son, his oldest son, was a Takeshi in a Kamen Rider, I don't say remake, but he became the Ichigo Kamen Rider 1, in a production at some point in time. And then his daughter was a Kamen Rider for one of the series. I don't know which series, but she was a Kamen Rider at one point in a series. So it's kind of cool. Kind of cool that they kind of kept that in, you know, in the family. So that's really cool. Really fun. Really awesome. Yeah. So also found out that the guy who plays Taki, he did a martial arts school. Or he's currently running a martial arts school, which is pretty cool. And actually, a lot of that, he founded that sometime after. Oh, well, he originally auditioned for Takeshi to play Hongo, Takeshi Hongo. And that, when that didn't obviously work out, he became Taki. And then he created this school that is, I think I saw it still to this day, has helped train a lot of either stunt actors or basically a lot of people who work for a lot of tokusatsu shows. So he's still kind of running, still doing stuff in the business. So that's really kind of awesome, really kind of cool. And this was just some random stuff I'd seen this week, the last couple days, when I was going through these episodes. So just kind of some fun stuff. Yeah, that's really the only, the problem is I don't really have any like fun tidbits that I can just like pop in here. And without somebody I can play off of, I don't really have any banter I can do. And it's not like I can give a prediction of what I think the episode will be about, because I watch the episodes first and then I come on here and record. So unless I can bring something to the table, it's literally just me hopping around to the episode. And I don't know. I mean, I can do that, but I also feel like me just coming in here and just hopping into the episode is, I mean, it's fine, but I just feel like I can do something more before I do the episode itself. But ah, well, I got 5-ish minutes out of it almost, so it is what it is. Anyway, all right, well, let's go ahead and get into the episode itself. So episode 25, Defeat Kinako Muragu. So two things here at the beginning of this episode. First is that the Great Leader gave the order to kill Hayato so that Shocker can get rid of or be rid of a Kamurata once and for all. If you recall, Hayato was captured by Kinako Muragu at the very end of the episode. When they were in the fight, Kinako Muragu sprayed him with his mushroom spores while he was in Kamurata. While he was in Kamurata, disguise isn't the right word, form. And he was like, he got transformed back into his Hayato, into his human form. I'm assuming because he lost power, but also the spores were able to infect him and they knocked him out. And so the end of the episode, we ended it with him at the Shocker base with a buzzsaw basically hanging over his head, about ready to chop his head off. Kinako Muragu was all for this until his arrogance got the better of him and he defied the Great Leader's orders, all because he wanted Hayato to suffer as the buzzsaw cut his head off. So instead of leaving him unconscious while killing him, Kinako Muragu ordered the scientist to revive him. The second thing is that I really should have had a Taki infiltrates a Shocker base count, because he did it again here. And this is like the fourth or fifth time since he's shown up. I mean, he showed up in like episode 11, 12, something like that. And so we're on episode 25 and he's done it like 4 or 5 times. I mean, I'm not going to go back and do it now, but just keep in mind he's infiltrated the base so many times. But yeah, anyway. So, and thanks to Kinako Muragu reviving Hayato after he was sprayed with the mushroom spores, now he knows what to grab to help the kids that are laid up at the hospital. So while Kinako Muragu is taunting Hayato, Taki, dressed up as a combat man, is at the foot of the table, unstrapping the restraints around Hayato's legs. Just before the blade can get to Hayato, Taki rushes over to the controls and turns off the machine. It becomes complete chaos as the two of them fight their way out of the Shocker base. Taki does manage to grab the jar that has the antidote to the mushroom spores in it before Hayato grabs him, and the two of them jump through the ceiling. And because of a jump like that, Hayato was able to get enough air to circulate into his belt, allowing him to transform. They run towards the exit, but get stopped by an invisible wall. Ryder says that it was a special optical barrier, and I question this show's definition of optical. I know Kinako Muragu said something similar last episode when the ladies were looking, when they followed the car or the truck to the base, and it disappeared underneath the power lines. And Kinako Muragu is just like, yes, they cannot see us because of my optical barrier. It's just like, what? Okay. Sure. I guess so. Anyway, Ryder asked Taki how he was able to get into the base in the first place. Taki said that he was on the top of the truck that brought him in. Suddenly, a couple of combat men show up to capture them. Ryder grabs Taki by the waist and seems to rocket propel the two of them through the barrier. He figured out that the secret was to be going at a certain speed, and that speed wasn't walking, apparently. Taki hands Ryder the antidote, telling him that this is what revived him. Hayato takes the antidote to the doctor that is taking care of the kids. He is able to convince the doctor to test the serum on one of the kids, and when it is a success, everyone is happy to see that it worked. Hayato asks the doctor to analyze what little serum is left and to try and make some more. A lot more. He is pretty sure that they are going to need it. So, I know that Ball is life and all that, but Kimiko and Hiroshi, the two kids that were knocked out last, like that started this whole thing, must really love tennis. They were poisoned, kidnapped, and then held hostage, and immediately upon their rescue, they are back on the court playing. That's dedication. The ladies from the racing club are here too, and they finally acknowledge that Goro was poisoned, which, if you remember last week, or last episode, I was mentioning how they didn't say that at all. Suddenly, they see Kimiko and Hiroshi collapse, so they call an ambulance to rush them to a hospital. The doctor examines them and is worried that their heart rate is dropping. That's not the only thing that is dropping, though, as the ladies start clutching their chest and throats as they drop to the ground. I did laugh when the doctor told the nurse that they need to call an ambulance, and the nurse told him that they're in a hospital. Either way, the doctor figures out that this virus is now contagious, as he goes down and the nurse runs out. The virus quickly spreads throughout the hospital, and then it spills out into the city. There was one guy who managed to get into his car and drive a ways from the hospital before he crashed and infected anyone that came to help. Hayato goes to see his doctor friend to see what progress he has been able to make with the serum, which, it turns out, is significant. They immediately start administering it to everyone in the hospital. Not sure why they didn't try to find a way to make it airborne so the vaccine could spread faster, but like RFK Jr., I'm not a doctor and I just assume how things could work. At the racing club, a party is being thrown for the ladies and Goro for getting back on their feet after being infected. Hayato sends them some flowers with a message about Shocker being more than they can handle, and that they should start focusing on becoming brides. Hayato, no. Dude, no. I know we've come a long way for women's rights since the 70s, but come on, man. And just to prove Hayato wrong, the four ladies decide that they are going to go search for the Shocker base on their own. Worried that they might be a bit over their heads, Tachibana phones up Taki to look after them. Why Hayato and Taki weren't at the party is a bit of a surprise, but whatever. After Tachibana hung up the phone, a giant mushroom appeared in the racing club that then turns into Kiniko Muragu, who then sprays Tachibana with his spores to knock him out. The ladies find a place that I can only describe as a hill with a bunch of openings or caves. I know something like this has a specific name, but I just can't remember what it's called. Just think of Star Wars Episode II, Attack of the Clones, when they are on Geonosis. The Geonosians, had their little caves that line the walls of their hills. It's kind of like that. Anyway, they start looking around and immediately get attacked by combat men. They are able to hold their own, proving Hayato wrong, and I believe I can give Mari and Yuri a few ticks on the kill count. Mari does have her sword, and while it could be a fencing sword, when she strikes the combat men, they go down and stay down. Plus, Ryder uses it later on and is killing guys with it. So, As for Yuri, she tosses a few out of one of the openings, and they rolled off screen. I didn't see them come back, so I think that counts. Anyway, as they are weaving their way through the tunnels fighting the combat men, Taki shows up and takes over beating everyone up. As they are escaping, they get cut off by Kinako Muragu, and Taki gets a face full of mushroom spores. Hayato makes his way to the hill and finds everyone all tied up, with Tachibana and Taki unconscious. He starts climbing the outside, has to fight a few combat men, and then Kinako Muragu sets off an explosion that launches Hayato into the air and causes him to transform. I would like to say that if the ladies didn't know Hayato was Kamen Rider before, they certainly do now. It's still uncertain, though. Rider doesn't interact with any of them next episode. Hayato does, but not Rider. Now that Rider is here, he starts to go ham on all the combat men, taking out one after another as he is running through the tunnels of these cave systems, or of this cave system. Yuri has Mari grab a knife that she has tucked away in her belt so that they can cut themselves loose and then get the others free. A combat man does show up, and I'm convinced that Yuri snapped his neck with her karate chop because, once again, he didn't get up. It is possible that he was just knocked out, but I like the fact that these women are so pissed off at Hayato for telling them to go get married that they are proving that they take these lackeys out they can take these lackeys out like Taki or Tachibana. They get everyone off the hill or mountain or wherever the heck it is, which is a good thing because after Rider finishes up with all the combat men, all that is left is Kinako Muragu. They both have swords and are swinging them at each other, but they are blocking each attack until finally Rider is able to disarm Kinako Muragu. He goes to shoot spores at him, and I'm not sure why he would do that, especially since Rider is now immune to his spores. But Rider throws the antidote at his face, causing him to burn, and then gives a Rider kick that sends him flying off to the side and landing on what I can only assume was a landmine that caused a huge explosion that set off a chain reaction to all the other mines and bombs laying around this base. And I'm using air quotes because the next scene has Ryder giving the kids that Shocker still had captured the antidote, and he is doing this in the actual base. He's also grabbing them off the beds pretty drastically, that it comes as no surprise that the third and fourth kids got off the beds themselves, not wanting to be thrown around like the first two were. And yeah, so that's where that episode ends. I mean, it ends with Ryder riding off and then the ladies and Tachibana like waving him off. But yeah, that's where it ends. So our kill count, though, Kamen Rider has 15 on this episode. He was going ham on those combat men. But Mari had 5 and Yuri had 4. And like, I'm counting them as kills. They took them out. They definitely did. And then for our ragdoll roundup, I've got combat man. Oh yes. So, there was one moment when I think it was right after Ryder transformed and he runs through one of the tunnels and comes out the other side. He stabs one of the combat men and then the camera like shifts and he kicks one off of the hill. off the top of the hill, whatever. And it goes flying down. That combat man was 100% like just a stuffed doll. And I was watching this at the gym and I had to rewind it originally. And I audibly was like, oh hell yeah, that's awesome. It was really great too. Really great to see. The second one also going off the side of the hill was Kinako Muragu when he got Ryder kicked off the side. That was definitely another doll just going flying. So, yeah, we got 2 of them there. So, on to our next episode, The Terrifying Ant Lion Pit. That's what it's called. It was what it was called on YouTube, what it was called on the wiki page. Go with me here, okay? So this one starts out weird. There's a couple driving down the road when they get caught in a storm, but it turns out to be raining sand. And then there is so much sand that the car the couple is driving gets stuck. The car starts to sink into the sand, forcing the two to get out. But then they also get swallowed up by the sand. The villain behind it all pops up out of the sand, and it's unclear if his name is Oroji Goku or Auntie Sanda. Oroji Goku means anti-lion, or aunt lion, which is a type of beetle, exactly what I assume this guy is supposed to be. Also, Auntie Sanda, Aunt Lil Thunder, which is what the English dub on YouTube translated it to, into an English to Japanese translator, and I got Auntie Sanda. So I think that is his name. But Oroji Goku sounds better, if I'm being honest. Either way, Big Bad Beetle Knockoff heads back to the Shocker base after a successful trial run with the killing of these peoples, to find that his combat men are a bit on edge. He also says his name different again here, calling himself Oroji Sanda this time around. So that is a name I'm going to stick with for him. Oroji Sanda actually sounds really good. The combat men inform Oroji Sanda that the great leader has sent for Colonel Zol from the Near and Middle East chapter of Shocker to become the commander-in-chief of the Japan branch. Zol shows up, looking like he just stepped out of World War II, still wearing his uniform and all, and starts barking orders at everyone. Taki gets a radio transmission from the FBI that Colonel Zol is being transferred to Japan, so he is vowing revenge on him for all of the fallen FBI agents that Zol has killed in the past. Sometime later, Hayato, Taki, and Yuri are out riding after seeing a news report talking about unexplained cave-ins that have been happening across the Japanese roadways. They know that Shocker has something to do with it, but their search came up empty. Well, empty for our protagonist anyway. Colonel Zol was able to gather some useful information, specifically on Taki. He had gotten a picture of him when Taki had taken a break on the side of the road, and when the three of them grabbed a bite at a diner, he was able to record his voice with a hidden microphone set up at the table. He had this done so that he can change his appearance to look like Taki. How he was able to regrow an eye is beyond me. Yeah, I kind of forgot to mention that Zol is missing an eye, so he wears an eye patch. Yeah, he's that type of bad guy. So, not Taki goes out for a ride and ends up making some police mad because he rode through a barrier that they had set up on one of the roads that had a cave-in. They chase after him, and not Taki lures them out to an open area where he proceeds to kick the living shit out of them. When he is done, he tells them to remember his face and then hops back on his motorcycle and drives off. As for the real Taki, he is riding with Hayato and Yuri when it starts to rain sand around them. Hayato tells the others to head back down the road and stop anyone else from coming up while he sees what happens with the sand. And with those two now gone, what happens is he got stuck in the sand. And then combat men shoot out of the ground to attack him. He transforms into Kamen Rider to take them on. And immediately, I need to point out to a choice that was made. One combat man goes to attack and Rider dodges, but the combat man overextended himself and ended up rolling down the hill that they were on. No big deal, it happens all the time, and he was rolling toward the camera and off, out of frame. But then the camera changed and decided to follow him as he continued to roll down the hill until he got all the way to the bottom. No idea why, but they just focused on that. And it's a very weird choice, and I do try to call out the weird camera choices when I see them. I mean, it's been a while. I mean, the last one I can remember was very early on when it was definitely a Takeshi episode when the camera spun upside down and then back and then upside down again, like multiple times. Don't know why they did it, but they did. So when I see them, I'm going to try and call them out. So Ryder takes out the rest of the combat men and then goes after Eroji Sanda, who is standing nearby. And instead of attacking, he waves his hand, which causes Ryder to trip up and then go sliding down the hill to the bottom where a pit opens up to swallow him. It is possible that Eroji Sanda manipulated the sand to trip Ryder up. That would be a decent explanation, honestly, especially since he's able to make sand rain, or make it rain sand, I guess. Ryder is unable to get out, but he gets the idea to summon Cyclone, because I guess his motorcycle is a magic beast now. Seriously, he pressed a button on his belt and it just appeared at the top of the hill. But he summoned Cyclone and then had the bike launch a rope to him so he could pull himself out, and then he left. He wasn't winning this battle at this moment, so he made the right decision. Over with Taki and Yuri, they are flagging down any car that tries to go down the road and to have them go another way. A couple of police show up and ask them what they are doing, since these two are basically doing their job, and one of them recognizes Taki from the beating he took earlier. They say he is under arrest for murder and interfering with an officer. I'm not sure if this is a bad translation, because isn't interfering with an officer just resisting arrest? Otherwise, if I were to walk in front of one, could that be considered interfering with them? And if that's true, that would be very ice of them if they go that route. He tries to argue that they are mistaken, but ends up going with them willingly, saying that once they investigate, then everything will be cleared up. I know they do things specifically for plot reasons, but why he doesn't just pull out his FBI badge and say, "Let's call my superiors and get this handled," at any point is beyond me. Nope, instead he is doing handstands in a jail cell. Hayato goes to see Taki by climbing the wall on the outside, since they won't let him actually talk to him inside, and Taki asks if he is going to get him out. Hayato tells him that he needs to stay in here, especially if there's a cyborg out there pretending to be him. They don't want to give the police actual evidence that he is a criminal if he gets broken out of prison. As much as he doesn't want to, Taki agrees. When Hayato, Yuri, and Goro get back to Hayato's place, not Taki is there. He says that after they left the police station, Shocker attacked, so the police arrested him and let not Taki go. Because apparently Shocker is one person now. It's a bullshit story that Hayato obviously doesn't believe, but he can't let on that he knows. However, Yuri and Goro do believe it. And Zol is so good at being Taki that when he tells Yuri and Goro to go home, they start to argue like they normally do. Once they are gone, Hayato pulls out a map, and he and not Taki make plans for the roads that they are going to search the next day. They worked all through the night, but other than the map on the table, I didn't see any indication of where they were going to go look. Hayato starts to doze off, so not Taki took this as an opportunity to go plant a time bomb on Hayato's motorcycle. And he would have gotten away with it too, if he was a better villain. Because Hayato wasn't asleep and caught him red-handed. And Taki got released from jail because the police did run a check and see that he is part of the FBI. So he is here too. Doesn't excuse the fact that a man that looks like Taki apparently killed two police officers and they just let him walk free though. I don't know what's going on there. Now that the jig is up, Zol reveals his face and introduces himself, and then tells these two that all that hear his name and see his face must die. I do feel bad for all those combat men then. Hopefully they keep their eyes closed anytime he comes into a room. Speaking of, after Zol easily beats our two heroes up with his riding crop, he then calls in some combat men so he can escape. Taki tells Hayato to go after Zol while he handles the combat men, but while he is chasing after the ex-Nazi, Orochi Sanda pops up and starts making it rain sand again, there we go, causing Hayato to get stuck. He has to abandon his motorcycle so he can transform and then take the fight to Orochi Sanda and some more combat men. The lackeys go down easy, and I would like to say that the fight with Orochi Sanda was good, but most of it was just the two of them rolling around in the sand for half the fight. At one point, Ryder is on Orochi Sanda's shoulders, and they go down in a wrestling move of sorts. Whoever's seen wrestling, it's the whole, like, sitting on top of the shoulders, and they throw each other kind of thing. It's that sort of thing. Another time, they are tumbling together like a wheel down an incline. It ends with Ryder delivering a Ryder kick to Orochi Sanda that sends him rolling down the hill into one of his own pits. Really thought Ryder was going to kick him into his motorcycle, you know, where the time bomb still is. And nope, that didn't happen either. They don't address that in the last minute and a half of the episode, so it better just explode next episode. I mean, I know it's not gonna, so I'll never get that satisfaction. The episode ends with Zol back at the Shocker base broadcasting to Ryder that as long as he is in Japan, then Shocker will be victorious, and then tells the next cyborg to get ready. So, we have got our kill count of 1 for Ryder, 2 for Orochi Sanda, and 2 for Zol. Although I should count it as Taki, but no, 2 for Zol. Which I did not add up the complete total. I want to say Kamen Rider is somewhere in the 50s at the moment. That one's on me. I didn't update it from last time. I should have it updated by next time. But as for our ragdoll roundup, we've got the car at the very beginning when the couple gets their car gets sucked into the sand. That car was completely a toy. Speaking of toys, we got Ryder when he's falling into the pit. Like, it's just a toy. The pit is there. The pit opens up, and the toy Ryder starts falling in. And similar with Orochi Sanda there at the end. When it rolls down, the pit opens up, the toy action figure, whatever you'll call it, falls into it and just sinks into the pit. So, yeah, that's what we have for that. Honestly, these episodes were... The second one was kind of more annoying than the first one. But even the first one was... They were making decisions that didn't make sense. So I feel like we're in a slump right now with these episodes. And I'll be honest, I was having a tough time getting through these episodes. Not for watching purposes, like for my writing notes purposes. Just trying to figure out, one, how to write it. Two, because they were doing quick scenes. Like, it's a lot of quick scenes of... like little scenes, like, okay, here's a little scene of Kamen Rider, of Hayato doing something, and then they jump to Taki doing something, and then they jump to, like, it's all different scenes, different places. So I gotta figure out a way to make it all together, but I do. So I don't know. This episode, the second episode, 26, was. I didn't like it as much. I mean, it's fine, but definitely out of these two, it wasn't my favorite. I mean, I should probably, if I wanted to rank them, I don't rank them, obviously, but it'd be down there in my episodes. So here we are. It all is what it is. So, yeah. So, thank you all for listening. Go ahead and, obviously, you're checking this episode out on maybe the its own feed, the Kamen Rider Chronicles feed, which is every Monday and Thursday. Or you're listening to it through the Comic Book Rundown feed, which means you're also listening to Rundown Reviews, which is every Friday. But we also have... we've got Comic Book Rundown, which is going to be coming out here beginning of the year every other Saturday. We've also got Getting Franchised the last Sundays of the month. You can also find us online on social medias, comicbookrundown@gmail.com. You can email us, comicbookrundown at... Wait, I said that wrong. You can find us on social medias at comicbookrundown. Email us, comicbookrundown@gmail.com. There we go. Guys, I'm tired. I'm so tired. I'm reworking too much. All right, everybody, I'm done. You guys have yourself a good one, and I will see you next time.